That's him. Or at least one of his friends. I stared at my phone on a wintry Boston night in January 2013, scrolling through my Twitter account. For the past several years, I'd watched terrorists chat with each other and pundits banter and commiserate on my feed, expressing their views on the current state of global jihad. Rarely did the two communities converse, instead expressing themselves in parallel worlds. Aslam Awan lived in the UK for 4 years, the tweet read, tagging my handle at Selected Wisdom and linking to a Telegraph news article. The name Aslam Awan meant nothing to me, but someone in Somalia had sought me out on Twitter to bring this story to my attention. I had a sneaking suspicion that it was Alabama-born and bred American terrorist Omar Hamami, someone I'd been monitoring for years, or one of his close associates. Like many other counterterrorism experts, I opined on the travails of Al-Qaeda and its followers on a blog. Mine was called SelectedWisdom.com and had an accompanying Twitter account. By 2013, I'd just finished my second stint at the FBI. Counterterrorism had become a hobby rather than my job, and the blog was a distraction from the daily grind in Boston. Writing on my own meant that I could focus on what I deemed important, pressing issues, rather than the pet projects of poorly informed bureaucrats checking their time in the Pentagon, or narrow FBI investigations completely devoid of the bigger picture. On the internet, too, I had an audience. Far more people read what I wrote in late-night blog posts than had ever consumed the analysis I did for the government. Serving as a contractor for countless Defense Department and intelligence community projects, I had written up massive research studies that littered the shared drives of the U.S. counterterrorism community. If they were read, they were routinely dismissed or forgotten amid an endless sea of similar reports pontificating on the strengths and weaknesses of Osama bin Laden and his legions. I don't really blame the U.S. intelligence agencies or the special operations folks scattered around the world for ignoring the countless tomes of analysis they'd purchased. They received far more content than they could ever possibly read, comprehend, and utilize. Freed from the bureaucratic constraints of Washington, left to my own devices and with the internet as my playground, I could broaden and deepen my study of terrorists. I had access to many more sources, could choose what I studied, and most important, could actually engage with the enemy. For lack of a better word, I could mess with extremists half a world away, observe their debates, gauge their commitment to terrorist principles, and poke them with queries, all from a laptop at home. The World Wide Web is and will remain the fastest and best way to be in touch with America's enemies. All of them go to cyberspace to connect with one another and attack us. The internet provided a virtual safe haven for Al-Qaeda, its affiliates, and its splinter groups. As terrorists flocked to social media, analysts and researchers outside of intelligence agencies no longer needed classified reporting to know what terrorists were up to. All we had to do was log on and watch. Online, jihadis posted their violent acts for all to see. These young men might have wanted to hide their real identities, but they worked hard to achieve notoriety as online personas. Interacting with counterterrorism experts like me on the internet lent them legitimacy and made them look fearless, elevating their international brand. I had some special knowledge of the Horn of Africa and its terrorist groups, so I spent a good deal of time observing and narrating the trajectory of the Twitter-savvy and notoriously violent Somali terrorist group known as Al-Shabaab. One of my most devoted readers on the subject resided in Somalia and happened to be one of America's most wanted terrorists. As terrorist recruits go, the whiter the terrorist, the weirder the story, and Omar Hamami definitely fit that mold. Born the son of a Syrian-American father and an American woman, Omar grew up in one of the least likely places to produce a terrorist recruit fighting in the Horn of Africa, Daphne, Alabama. Omar was an exceptionally bright but contrarian kid, and his path to violent jihad twisted and turned through stops in Toronto and Cairo before reaching Mogadishu in 2006. By his account, he was immediately met and assessed by one of Al-Qaeda's most notorious operatives, Fazul Abdullah Mohammed. Fazul, as he was commonly referred to in counterterrorism circles, once served as personal secretary to Osama bin Laden and orchestrated Al-Qaeda's operations throughout the Horn of Africa, including the 1998 bombings of U.S. embassies in Nairobi, Kenya, and Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. Having passed an initial screening, Omar joined a sizable cadre of fellow foreign fighters from around the world seeking to establish an Islamic state in a country torn apart by decades of war.